Joining Express Yourself Now is Robert Birch, glass artist. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks for having me.
And new Katie and K DJ, too.
Exactly.
You like that?
DJ Berto.
So do you have a certain playlist for working with hot glass?
Metallica.
Oh, don't tell me. That's funny. Seriously, yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the mood of what you're making, but sure. when you're going huge and the whole team is working, yeah, it's good to have the upbeat stuff.
Well, I watched several videos on your website, robertbirchllc.com, and interesting, instructive for me. I don't know much about glass. You know, I saw you pull several blobs of molten glass out of the kiln, but what happened? How did it get to that point? Is it like a conglomeration of sand? What? Tell me about it. How does it work?
There are a number of American factories that produce glass that we use, and it more or less looks like 50-pound bags of ice cubes. And so it's on its second melt. So a different factory will formulate stuff, and it's mostly silica and a few different fluxes to lower the working temp. And more or less, they just put it into a giant furnace that spills glass out, and they chop it up into these little pillow-looking things, ice cubes, and they just ship it out. And then we throw it into a different furnace, and you pull it out on steel rods, more or less.
I saw a number of specialized tools. I'm sure there are plenty of those to cut it and shape it, and you have to do that while it's hot, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. The working temp is around 2400, 2350, and not many of the tools have changed since medieval times.
Seriously?
Yeah, except for the computers on the kilns and that type of thing, but I mean, we can dive into the history of it. More or less, you have a furnace which is a bucket of molten glass that hangs out all the time at around 2000, and then you have a reheating oven. It's about 2400, and that's where you can heat the glass up even hotter and manipulate it into whatever you need to make. And then you have an annealing oven, which is more or less a kiln, and that's at 1000. So when you're done working on the glass, you throw it into the kiln and you press go on the computer, and it cools it overnight for, you know, a standard cup thickness, and then that's called annealing, and that takes the stress out of the glass as it cools.
Huh. And I imagine you can add all sorts of things to the molten glass to get certain effects, powders, chemicals.
Exactly. And the way that glass color is made, people often ask this question, it's different metals mixed with glass and the first melt process. So, you know, magnesium will make black, cobalt obviously makes blue, and there's a different mixture of metals in the glass that change the color, and then you actually purchase the color because you don't want to be hanging out, you know, with powdered magnesium flying around or all those different things. So you just buy the color and mix it into the clear glass that you have.
I see. And then to finish it, I imagine there are all sorts of things you can add to the glass.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, diamond tools is kind of how you carve glass, you know, with engraving like Waterford crystal. You know, you can sandblast it. And the incandescent show is sort of an example of trying to push different mediums into glass and coating things. But you can actually, you know, coat glass with steel and make it rust. And the things that I think are the most interesting about that show, not necessarily from an aesthetic standpoint, but from a material studies standpoint, is a friend of mine named Jesse England up in Seattle had started pouring copper into vessels, and I thought that was a great idea. So I took that at a residency I was just at and used glass, like hollow vessels, to cast metals into. So I poured aluminum, bronze, copper, and mild steel, all like a liquid temperature, into glass while it was about 1,000 degrees. And what's interesting about that is when you're casting bronze, you have a positive, you know, a wax mold, then a negative, a mold to pour the metal into, and then you get your bronze. But by using glass, you actually, on the fly, within 10 or 15 minutes, you can actually create a hollow form, like a mold, and then pour the metal into it. And it's highly incompatible, so you chip the glass away, but you've actually used this new medium, or this old medium, to use with metal in kind of a new way.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. Huh. How did the glass bug bite you? It's not the kind of art that most people immediately think of.
Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't actually think glass would be something I'd pursue. I thought photography was. That was really my first artistic passion. But I was on a senior project, and I worked for a photographer and a glass blower in the month that I had off. And by the end of it, I just realized that I didn't have as much fun Photoshopping as I did working with all these weird tools. And there was some excitement to the heat and getting burned and trying to, you know. And that's more or less how I started to go into it. And then I just kept working in the factories over and over again, you know, and didn't really stop and just stayed with it.
That's how you learn.
Yeah, I tried to go to college for one semester, and it didn't really fit with me, and I couldn't quite understand why I was paying so much money for the approval of people that I didn't quite respect. And I had already been working professionally in a factory shop in Atlanta for a couple of years before I even went to college, so it didn't quite make sense to me, and I just didn't have the money to throw at it. So I moved to Seattle when I was 19 with a backpack and washed dishes at a bakery and started getting glass jobs on the side because I didn't actually think I had the chops to work on the level up there because it's the highest in the world. And, you know, just being on the teams, there's always, it's like a sailboat. There's no idle hands, so they'll always put you to work. And through that, you just sort of build your skill set up that way.
Huh. You worked with several or a couple of big names in the glass world, Martin Blank and Dale Chihuly.
Yeah. I was Martin's full-time guy for almost 5 years, and it started, I was just skateboarding by his glass shop, and he started yelling at me, like, I need some help, like, and so I just was torching, and the next day he called me and asked me to be his studio assistant, and I didn't really know who he was or, you know, frankly care. I just needed a job, and so I just, through him is where my, like, true experience comes from, because I wasn't just blowing glass on the team. I was shipping and packing, and through that learned the metalwork for the armatures and the gallery stuff and everything in between in the process that, you know, makes you a true professional as opposed to college, which I think prepares you more for a conceptual explanation of your glass or artwork in general. But I learned mostly through Martin. And then he is best buddies with Dale Chihuly, and every time we needed new colors for a series, Dale would call Martin. And we would kind of create our own team, and I was always in charge of running the colors for the Persians, and that was for a few years, and it was thankless, but it was also really interesting to watch the process, and kind of eerie to see your design on a poster at Seattle Center, you know, 6 months later, and just think like, whoa, I have nothing to do with this anymore. It was a weird thing to come to terms with, the thanklessness of that industry, but it was also cool because you can talk about it now and look back and learn from it.
Well, I guess you could say that about anything, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, in order to refute somebody's technique, you have to learn it first before you say, that doesn't work for me. I like it to do it this way.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you're getting paid to learn on the job, which is, I think, just the biggest part of just throwing yourself into any field or any craft is trying to just learn on the job. And if you show up on time and do a good job, they'll keep calling you back. You know, it doesn't really matter so much of the degree that you have.
Yeah. Huh. Now, you're not creating functional work, are you? It's sculptural.
Yeah, I've kind of departed from the functional stuff. I do some small production vases and things like that when people ask me to, but the less that I do that, the happier I am. There's so much that could be done with the medium in a sculptural realm, and I think combining different mediums with glass is the shortcoming in general, and so I'm just so focused on trying to combine glass and wood and metal and, you know, whatever else I can think of. Ceramics, we're doing a clay show. On April 1st Friday, the Clay Center and a couple glass artists in the Valley are teaming up, and we're trying to develop a glass, it's called 96, compatible glaze, so you could put a glass handle onto a ceramic mug and it wouldn't break off.
Huh.
Something like that. So always just trying to push these ideas further and see what you come up with.
Interesting. Huh. And you must have a kiln and a workshop somewhere because, you know, it's... You need some room to do this.
Oh yeah, and that's the hard part in the valley.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
I have a space over at Saw, Allegheny, and his artist collective, and that's been really helpful because he's so great about just allowing you to explore ideas, whatever you want. He never says no. It's amazing, and so I've made a mobile glass kiln over there.
which you will debut this afternoon on First Friday.
Absolutely. Crystal Glass Studio, Mary Matchell, and John, who used to be a DJ here.
Yes.
They're letting me blow glass out in their parking lot. And inside, it's a show of new pendant lights or new lighting. So there's an art show inside and then outside. I'll be taking this strange mobile kiln out and trying to make glass in the parking lot and involve people. So we'll have some glass on the table and people can arrange it, and we'll try our best to make it into something functional.
So you can actually make any piece you would have made in a regular workshop in this mobile? No,
absolutely not. No, this is using cane and Marini and what we call blank. So I actually make components at another glass shop, and then I can spend more time assembling them in this mobile glass shop. And truly, it's more of an educational unit than it is a professional one. I try to do most of my glass work at a shop in North Carolina that runs off methane gas from a landfill.
Oh, interesting.
And it's the only one in the U.S., I think, that's doing this truly. There's one that says they are, but they're not really. But Tim Muth does the Jackson County Green Energy Park, so I go down there for a couple months every fall to make all my work, just so you can alleviate the environmental guilt of this whole process by just using methane-powered glass shop to make your work. So I feel so much better about doing that. So
wow, huh? That sounds like something worthy of pursuit in here, if possible.
I think there's a survey going on right now of the feasibility of an anaerobic digester in the valley, anyone listening who knows about that, it would be a great idea. And a lot of times it's overlooked for the artistic applications, because you can run a glass blowing shop, a blacksmithing forge, and a ceramics kiln all off the methane that would just be released into the air without, and you can capture and actually use it for art projects.
Huh. So. How about that? When you make a piece, Robert Birch, are you starting from a drawing? Do you draw your pieces first?
Hardly ever. I have an idea of how something will probably go in my head, and I'll work it out usually mentally. And when I'm in the shop, I'm at the point now where it tends to kind of go in the direction I'm thinking. But it's such a amorphous material. If it starts kind of going off the rails into another direction, it's less effort to fight it and just let it roll and kind of turn into whatever it's going to be.
So you have to be ready to improvise on the spot.
Absolutely. And what makes the work so much easier is when you have assistants. And it's just like in a band. You have your drummer, you have your bassist, and then you have, the lead singer. And if you're team can work with you when something kind of goes off the rails and allow you to kind of just improvise in this way, and they don't question you and they don't ask you all these questions about why you're doing something, it makes your job so much easier. So Chihuly, one of Chihuly's employees, is my best friend, Taylor Ames, and he's my favorite guy to work with, because he just knows, like, if something just starts going this direction, to just roll with it and enjoy it instead of force it back to a certain way.
So let's talk a little about Incandescence at the Launchpad. It's a show that you curated, at least the glass part of the show, and it involves, nine local glass artists?
I think less than that. We have Jacqueline Spiro, and she has a glass shop / casting shop kind of by the Waldorf School, and her son Wyatt and Dylan are also glass workers, so they're involved. Jose Chartier lives in Missouri Heights, and he's the real deal. When you take a step back and look at him in context of the entire glass industry, his work is amazing. It's so intricate. And then we have TJ Osula, and he was a glass worker in Australia, but he's from Glenwood, and now he's back in the Valley, and he's a great technician. And Lily Meadows, Allegheny's daughter, is actually a glassblower, so we had her involved. And Shannon Muse, she does fused work, and she shows out of Crystal Glass Studios as well. So I just was given the opportunity to curate the show, and I thought it would be selfish to only exhibit my work, because we have a huge amount of talent in the Valley. For such a small place, there's a lot of really good glass workers around here. Oh, and Mary Matchell and I did a collaboration, and Deborah Fluke. who's a metal worker. But in this valley, there's a lot of talent. So I just wanted to showcase that in a group setting, just to get the word out a little bit more that, you know, there's a really cool sort of movement going on right now. And if anyone's curious, you know, just to join.
You mean a movement of local glass artists?
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
I mean, I suppose the combined experience is like in the hundreds of years. Like Mary Matchell alone is huge wealth of knowledge, and Jacqueline and Dylan. I mean, they've got a great shop to work out of. So all the tools are there, and I think the people are starting to show up a little bit too. You know, and it's really, you know, 8 or 9 people, like you said, total. But you know, in that group, there's not a lot that we couldn't put our heads together and figure out how to make for people, which is
great. How cool is that? Yeah. I had no idea that was happening in the valley. What do you think accounts for that agglomeration of talent in this time and place?
That's a great question. I think it's more happenstance than anything. But the people that have shown up are so talented that it's kind of a great little mix of people. And we're trying to get the word out as we can. And Jacqueline and Dylan will host little parties, demonstrations. People can come and watch because it's a fascinating process. Not necessarily the final product. It can be a beautiful thing, but the process together is more like a dance than anything else. So I think it lends itself to a demonstration style.
Let's talk about your piece in the show. It's part of your material studies series. Tell me about that.
There's probably 25 or 30 pieces in there in the sort of material studies vein of exploration. And I try to address it like it truly is research, less than I'm making a painting or metal and glass can work together in a number of different ways, and I've been kind of exploring this for a while, and there's a lot of broken glass in this history, but I put glass onto a lot of pieces of metal or actually inflated the glass into pieces of metal, and because there's a shrinkage that happens while the glass cools, it can pull away from the steel and actually survive the cooling process without breaking. And so I've been experimenting a lot with just combining different metals in glass or wood and glass together. And that's where the material studies sort of title comes from. And I think it sort of speaks for itself when you go in there because there's no piece that's really repeated. And that's not my interest to repeat ideas. It's always just to go forward. And really, it's just as simple as going through some buddy's metal scrap bin and pulling out things and thinking about how glass might work with these pieces of metal.
You know, listening to you describe your art and how you produce it, I'm struck by the fact that it's a combination of the technical materials aspect of it and the inspirational part of it. It's a fusing of the two, pardon the phrase. Is that a fair statement? Is that kind of the way you conceive of it? How does it work in your mind, in your artistic imagination?
Yes, that's totally accurate. I think, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years now. You know, I started when I was 16. And a lot of glass workers, I think, cripple the movement as an industry because a lot of people will find a certain idea and they figure out that it sells and then they make it in every color of the rainbow. And you can look back 20 years onto the big names, Ben Moore, Dante Marioni, and it's a very craft-based medium. And because they figure out the formula of what sells and they repeat it, that doesn't say a lot for the medium, and it's sort of an insult, and it does pigeonhole glass as craft. And so by trying to force glass into other mediums, it forces other mediums to interact with glass and take it away from the craft medium that it's associated with most strongly. And there's only a number of people that have ever taken it away from that, and one of them is Dale Chihuly, William Morris, you know, Howard Bentray goes to an architectural realm, and Martin Blank. So those are I feel like the real pioneers pushing the medium, and I'm just trying to just take a page out of their book and keep pushing it further than pretty vases and cups, which is what most people think glass art is.
And the ultimate goal is to be in a large, esteemed gallery? Is that what you're shooting for? How do you market your work?
I don't. I I don't have any social media. I don't have any at all. And I have a website. I'm in a number of galleries and a number of them international museums too. But I don't actually think I have an audience. It's sort of a, I think, personal connections that sort of wind me up in these places. And maybe the work itself, I think, speaks for itself. Maybe one day, you know, people will talk about, you know, the name more. But I feel like being a career artist, then this talks to a bigger picture. But being a career artist is very vain and self-indulgent. And that's why I think why I don't even talk to many people about it, frankly. You know, it's sort of a private affair for me.
Interesting. You know? So kind of a purist approach to what you're doing.
Right. There's no market or, you know, there's no capitalistic endeavors to this. You know, I'm an artist and that's just, I'm never going to make any money. That's fine. You know, but it takes you great places and you just, you know, you can travel the country just like a band, like doing a demonstration at a college, talking about your ideas and helping other people with their path. And then they give you gas money. You can go to the next college. So, I mean, there are ways to travel on it, but I don't have any name recognition, I don't really think. Maybe I do. I don't know.
Well, you know, you say the work speaks for itself, and at some point, somebody's going to hear that voice and see it, and that's what you're aiming for, it sounds like. And, you know, I have to admire your purist approach to that, but I'm willing to bet that because you're so committed to how you do what you do, eventually that payoff comes.
Yeah, one would hope. I work for James Searles part time, and that's, you know, I make most of my income just from welding, frankly. And glass is like you said, a Puritan. You know, it's a really honest approach, and you know, I'm genuinely passionate about it. And that's with the mobile glass shop, just trying to help other people. And just, you know, the art bus that's going to be driving around for CCAH, the glass shop will go with it so I can show kids in parking lots how glass is made. And that's sort of where my focus is. And it's a lot easier to not get on your high horse and tell other people how they should live or their career should go. It's much more humble just to do it yourself. And you avoid that offensive paternalism or altruism being enforced on anyone else. So I think eventually it'll just speak for itself, but I don't need to tell anyone else how to do anything.
Love that approach. Robert Birch, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.